Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello.
Hello, hello.
Hello.
Just been boring you to death, boring you to sleep with my sleep stories or my stories of not sleeping. Being an adult, I woke up this morning and I was like, oh my God. You know, when you're young, you're in your 20s and you're just like...
burst out of bed.
Yeah. Or you, things like this, topics like this are just not even on your radar. Like sleep, the thought of sleep. I've always just slept well. I've never thought about sleeping. I've never... like stressed about it. It's just been something I could do. Now, for some fucking ungodly reason, this year, I've already said this, and I feel like it kind of like could be an LA thing in the fact that I live in a very scary place alone and there's always noises, but I just can't sleep. And so like the night before last, I don't know why I did this. I need to stop with the weed gummies. I need to just like throw them away. I need to burn them because they just do no good for me ever. And every single time I'm like, why don't I just take another one and see how it goes? And every time I get absolutely fucked. Took a sleep gummy the night before last, tossed and turned the entire night, kept waking up really stoned. And then last night took a melatonin and slept well, but it's 8:35 in the morning and Grace was just like, hello. And I was like, I literally just woke up. I have the strongest coffee beside me. I had to wash my hair even though it wasn't dirty so that I could like try and wake up out of my slumber.
Well, you had a melatonin last night.
Yeah, because I literally can't fall asleep without anything. Yeah. Now
I actually understand that. I can't sleep when Zach's not here in the home by myself, just as a force of habit thing. Like before we lived together, I never struggled to. I think it's, I understand that for you living there in LA. I don't know what the answer is apart from melatonin.
I know.
But it's such a real thing. And if you don't sleep properly, I always feel like I'm not well rested at all. And I sleep so much.
Same.
I sleep minimum. Yeah. I sleep like 9+ hours a night. And I never wake up feeling relaxed.
I sleep always over 8. But yeah. Like I downloaded this app called Rise. And I think it's a UK thing. So you could get it. I don't think other people can get it on the app store if they're not in the UK. But I downloaded this app called Rise and you have to pay for it, but I did a free month trial and you should do it, Grace, because the free month trial tells you so much and it tells you how much sleep you need based on your energy levels and based on all the data that's on your phone, basically. And so mine was 8.5 hours and most nights I'll actually only end up sleeping like 8 hours, 10 or something. Or less, or 7 hours, 45. And that's just not actually enough for these bodies of ours. And so it was telling me that I was in sleep debt, like 3 hours of sleep debt, 4 hours of sleep debt.
Because it like accumulates over the week. Mm-hmm. That is really interesting. Okay, I'm going to get this app.
Yeah, but then you get obsessed with it. So I was like, so my sister was here. I was like, I'm in sleep debt. Like, I need to go to bed right now. And so last night, I couldn't afford to keep paying for it. And I also, it also tells you the times in the day. It's really interesting when your energy peaks and when it drops off. So mm-hmm. you have like a huge peak in the morning for productivity, which I often spend like walking to Pilates and back. And then I go to start work and I'm like, oh, I'm tired.
I'm tired.
Because your energy dips from 12 till 4. Well, mine does. Dips completely from 12 till 4. And then from 5 till like 9, I have this another really huge productivity window. And it tells you when you shouldn't have caffeine.
That's really interesting. Mine is definitely my circadian rhythm or whatever it's called is like a long descent from morning. I just dip all through the day. I don't understand. Like, Zach comes home from work and works through the night. And that just fills me with horror and anger and sadness. Like, I could never, ever work in the evening.
Oh, I work in the evening. That's why I go to bed late. It's really bad. I always stop working. I always work. I wake up and work from like 8:30 till 1. And then I basically don't even do anything else. I'm just in my house doing like nothing. I don't even know what.
Pottering.
Until like 4. And then I start working again from kind of 5. Last night I worked till 11:45. I know that's why I slept badly last night. Don't shake your heads at me. I can hear you all. But
shaking and tutting. She's working till 12. She's slamming melatonin. She's waking up at 8. She's jumping straight on the mic. She's an American workaholic. Oh, what?
Yeah, obviously try to have a gorgeous little wind down period. My Rise app tells me from 8:40 p.m. it's time for wind down. Try to stay off social media. Try to not work, etc. But the past 2 nights I've just been too busy.
Yeah, it's not good. I think I would like to work maybe 3 hours a day. I think that would be my ideal. Like 7 till 7. Yeah, I like it. I've realized I like an early rise, but just to work quietly. Not to like run or like go to the gym.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe finish the whole day at like 1 would be nice.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I've basically been doing for the past like 3 weeks because my sister's been here. And it is kind of possible if you just work really hard in those periods. If you do the Pomodoro method and actually work, you can get a lot done.
I also think that maybe I'm going to wrap this up in a minute because I'm like almost boring myself as I say this out loud. But I do think that when you work from home, you're more tired. I think the awareness that a bed is close by is like bad for your brain. I feel this like pull to the bedroom constantly through the day. My body just wants to
nap. Yeah, I worked in bed yesterday. Like on my bed yesterday.
You should be able to work somewhere where there is a bed.
I agree. Yeah, I didn't leave the house once yesterday at all. I've just been in these 3 rooms.
That's a nice day.
For so long, but yeah.
Nothing anyway, about.
So wait, when did we talk about Joe Jonas and Sophie Turner on the Patreon or on the main?
On the Patreon. So this is a good, we can give a micro take because we, all the things that we said as a very reactionary response to the Sophie Turner, Joe Jonas divorce narrative has now become the mainstream media narrative. And everyone's turned on Joe Jonas, and I just love how quickly everyone saw through that little tactic of his.
I know, it's so heavenly. But did you see that since we recorded Patreon? So we basically, when we recorded, he'd hired a divorce lawyer, I think the day before, and then the day of, he announced they were getting a divorce, and also started all those sources to TMZ started saying that basically she was a bad absent mother and that the kids have been with him the whole time. And then her team has basically still just stayed silent other than saying Sophie's filming in the UK and they decided together that the kids would stay at their home in America with their dad and his entire family because there's more support there than on her film set, which makes complete sense.
And she hasn't made anything like since having kids. Like, this is her first job in whatever years since having 2 back-to-back children, and now he's using this anyway.
Yeah, and then Grace, after we recorded, he went on a fucking pap stroll with the babies outside, even though they've barely been photographed with their children at all in the years that they've had them. Somehow suddenly by accident. Joe's got his hands full of kids out and about. I was like, fuck you.
His publicist needs to be like fired. The whole thing was just such an insane misstep. The kid, I could not believe the trotting out the kids, especially because what's really unfair about that is that it's like they as a couple have decided not to ever have the children photographed, and then for the children's protection or whatever, privacy. And then he decides to spin that as a further way to like denigrate Sophie Turner in the press by trotting them out, especially so the only picture you've ever seen of them is just with him. But that's because that's something they chose together. It's all so sneaky and underhanded and bothersome.
Yeah, it's so gross. And then I've loved that, yeah, as you say, it's become the whole media narrative, but just the articles that women are writing are so funny. They're like so one for Vogue was like, long live the party mum. And then someone in, and I think the Evening Standard or something, was just like, Joe Jonas has been painting Sophie Turner as a party girl, but he's obviously unaware that in the UK there's no higher compliment.
Yes, it's if anything, just made people like her and have more goodwill towards her than ever before, and has just outed him as annoying. The greatest thing about this was the about turn that he has done on stage. Have you read this? It's so good.
What?
So Teen Vogue wrote a thing saying that he appeared to reference his divorce from Sophie Turner on stage because they're on tour at the moment. And he took a moment at the show in LA to address the onslaught of hate that his wife has been receiving. And he said, it's been a tough week. And he just said, I just want to say, if you don't hear it from these lips, don't believe it, okay? Which is like, whatever. Thank you for the love and support. But then he sang this song that he wrote for her called Hesitate. And during the performance, he made a change in the lyrics from don't be scared because I'm on your side to don't be scared because I'm on her side. And then he started crying.
He's a bad actor.
Stop. Don't be scared. Don't be because I'm on her side. Like, yuck. And crying the fake tear, the crocodile tears on stage. You only care about her now because your tactic to wreck her didn't work.
Yeah.
I can't with a 35-year-old man behaving this way.
I know. I'm on Twitter and someone goes, mad how these attempted hatchet jobs make the target seem quite sound. I love UK chat.
Exactly. And the pictures were like suspiciously released of her doing shots at a bar. At the exact same time the pictures of him with the kids were released.
Oh my God.
It's terrible.
Someone on TikTok was saying their take was, they were just like, I know exactly why Sophie Turner and Joe Jonas are divorcing. And their take was that it's because she's cool and he wants to be cool desperately. So he kind of married her because she was really cool and loved that she made him seem cool, but then could just, because he's faking it, he was always just kind of like,
yeah,
jealous of her or something, and jealous of the way that she could so authentically be herself and people liked her for it, but he was always trying.
Yeah.
And he's so Jare. He's Jare. And so there was this kind of animosity building between them or something. I reckon she just went out and made friends easily. I feel like she just kind of stole the show. And they don't like that, as Taylor Swift just sang about Joe Alwyn.
Did she?
Not to another, bring it back to
Taylor Swift.
Taylor Swift.
As we said at the time, the last time we spoke about it, it's just so shocking, as we'll talk about in a moment with the Ashton Kutcher Mila Kunis thing, like getting that caught up in your own mythology and celebrity and personal brand, like to care that much that you could throw someone who is the mother of your children and someone you loved until very recently under the bus in that way, is just, it will never cease to shock me. It's like a psychopathic way to behave.
I know. It's absolutely crazy. I wonder who he'll end up with next.
Someone so boring.
Yeah. Did you see what I put on? I'll document of Sophie Turner. She's literally on she's outdoors, has a bow and arrow in between her toes.
No, it's not actually her.
Oh my God, who is that?
It's like some kind of
stunt double.
Stunt woman or something, but it looks just like her, yeah.
Oh my God. I was like, this is crazy, the shit they made her do for Game of Thrones. Okay, wow. Yeah, someone put up a tweet being like, Sophie Turner on her way to kill Joe Jonas. And I was like, wow. Can't believe it.
The UK's rallied around her so much specifically. There's probably some, but you know what? Even on the Daily Mail, which I do tend to find is a very specific audience, obviously. Like I tend to find the comments section is quite indicative of how a lot of people feel. Everyone was like, we love Sophie Turner.
Really?
Yeah, I just can't see, except for maybe like Christian Jonas brother heads. I can't see many people in the world who are on his side.
Yeah, the Evening Standard piece finished with, Sophie, I'm sorry you were too fun for your husband. I'm game for a night out. He can watch the kids. It's so funny. It just made her seem fun and cool. Like, it's so jokes. And then all of those things are resurfacing of her. Remember her at that game, whatever kind of game they were at, and she was on the camera and she had the red wine in the plastic cup, and they show her face. Have you seen this? It's like the best thing in the world.
Yeah.
And then she starts sculling the red wine. Wait, what did she do first? She like dabbed or something and then sculls the red wine, spills it all down her cheek, wipes her face.
When I saw that, I was like, how funny would it be if she actually was just this absolute hoon who was like causing havoc in the home and we're all just like, fuck off, Joe Jonas. And it's like completely justified. It'd be so funny. No one would even care.
No, but she's not. She's just fucking wanting to live at the same time as have kids, and he just wants a wife that's going to stay at home while he's on tour. Like, fuck off. Stop going on tour. No one cares.
No one wants to listen to your songs. I know. No one's interested.
Apart from Priyanka Chopra.
Except for Priyanka Chopra and whoever the other Jonas brother is.
Yeah, and what's she? She said nothing in all of this. Where's that sisterhood god now? Not to blame it on women. But who's Kevin's wife?
Yeah, Kevin. That's right.
Kevin and... He married, he was cute. He just married his little, like, non-famous love.
He probably had to marry her to have sex with her. In the old traditional. I think they're really religious, I suspect.
Yeah.
I think this is why it's causing such, like, visceral reaction with people, because it feels like from the outside, obviously we don't know the ins and outs of, like, any relationship, and it's kind of insane to talk about it, but it feels like that thing of, as you just said, the guy who marries the cool, fun, free-spirited woman and then feels betrayed that she doesn't turn into the boring, submissive domestic housewife that he secretly wanted the whole time. Like, he wants to have a cool public-facing person, but actually behind the scenes wants the very traditional thing, and it's all the reasons he fell for her become things that he uses against her. That feels like a trope I think a lot of women can relate to.
For sure. I also find it so funny that the source said Jonas had been caring for the children pretty much all of the time for the last 3 months while she filmed a series of the UK. It's like
that is not newsworthy. You're their father.
Which,
you're their other
parent. Which was decided upon before she went to the UK for filming because it was better for the children and your family's all there. Like, I doubt you've fucking been looking after them the whole time.
That is so funny that was in there. Like, do you literally want a pat on the back for raising your own child? Like, why is that even being discussed? It's so funny.
Yeah. And then she's, like, enjoying her life while she's not around her kids by drinking at a bar and stuff. Like, what?
She's supposed to, like, go home and pray the rosary every night.
Yeah, if we're going to cancel anyone, it's Justin Timberlake. For that kind of behavior, like, come on.
Exactly.
As if every man doesn't drink when they're not with their kids.
It's super crazy. It's a good like discussion. It's one of those good cultural discussions about latent misogyny and these under the cover under the surface ways that it pops up, which is good, I guess. A good convo.
Yeah. Yeah. I put on our page, on our Instagram, like, that me and you did Sophie Turner's first post-divorce interview in a magazine cover exclusive, and like three girls were just like, oh my God. Signed up immediately. I was like, tricked ya.
We ad-lib wrote her first post-divorce cover interview, and I can't wait for it to come out. We don't. We wrote basically the whole thing. When it comes out, we're going to do a word for word next to it. We're going to get so many things right.
We should write it beforehand, and then
we should write it, send it to some editors, see who picks it up, then send it to Sophie Turner's team to approve.
Yeah. We can also say we've got experience. You live in the UK.
What she might do as a wild card is a call her daddy.
Oh, I hope not.
I hope not too, but I can
see
it. Actually, Priyanka Chopra did one, so maybe not.
I think Cole Sprouse. Was it Cole Sprouse? Dylan Sprouse. Yeah. Whatever Sprouse was smoking.
The annoying Sprouse. Yeah.
Ruined that show for them.
That's...
Has she done a... what's that guy's name? Diary of a CEO or something that Maisie Williams went on? But I don't think she'd do that. I think it's too serious. I reckon she'll... It's a bit too, like...
Yeah, and he does those, like, clickbaity headlines too much.
Yeah, and I think it's too... what's the word? Too cutesy. Not cutesy. A bit too... Not genuine. What's the word? When earnest.
Yeah, earnest. Yeah, earnest. Yeah. A bit sincere, yeah.
Yeah.
But Call Her Daddy gets huge people. They got Zayn to talk about the fight with Yolanda, which...
But did anyone even listen to that?
No.
Like, I was like, oh, I care kind of about finding out what he has to say. And then I was like, I just don't even care anymore. And also they released so many snippets that you're just like, whatever.
And he still said nothing as well.
Yeah,
exactly. I was like, talk, why did you call her a Dutch slut? I literally need to know before I die.
Jennifer Lawrence is being like, I need to know what went on between Karlie Kloss and Taylor Swift is so me. And you're like, I need to know why you called Yolanda Hadid a Dutch slut. I need to know that as well. Have you been watching Housewives?
No, I kind of forgot about it. And then I just saw this morning that Jenna Lyons did another New York Magazine interview about it. She's going out with Cass Bird now. She's literally the coolest person ever. And Cass Bird spoke to New York Magazine and was just like laughing, being like, yeah, I don't watch Housewives.
I know.
She's so cool.
Yeah, she's so fucking cool. I've been watching it, but it's a slow burn. I think like all of these reality shows are such a slow burn until you fall in love with the characters. Like Love Island honestly takes you like... Love Island is on every single night and it honestly takes you like a whole month of watching every night of your life before you are remotely interested in like what happens and then it ends.
I know. I've still never watched it. This year might be my year.
Yeah. That final week though, when you're hooked, you're like, it's like literally all you think about.
The Olympics.
Yeah, it's like the Olympics. But yeah, with the Housewives, I'm not crazy obsessed. Yeah, I love watching Jenna though.
Yeah, I kind of just want to watch it to see Jenna. I just wish they'd done like an all chic lineup.
I don't know if they would have gotten one, but I think they'll start infiltrating more, which is cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was at... Wait, did I tell you that I was at like a fashion party and like the old school fashion journos of like her time were talking about her being on it, and I was like, this feels so
iconic.
It feels like this should be on the TV.
Yeah,
they were just like, why would she do that? It feels like a career ruiner. She's got some weird eyelash brand. And I was like,
justice for the eyelash brand.
I know, I didn't know.
We didn't know, and this is, to be fair, this is a messaging problem on Jenna's behalf.
Yes,
because not I've us, never heard this until this profile that she created them because she has a genetic disorder where her eyelashes and eyebrows don't grow properly, so they're like non-toxic something.
She could tell us that,
please. Yeah, that's a great narrative.
That's a great reason for creating this. I was like, this is so random. Why don't you release a line of like checkered shirts or something? Like,
yes, marble countertops.
But makes sense.
Yeah, I might wait. Even with the Housewives, I don't like how they do it week by week. I've never watched a season. I need it to be bingeable.
Okay, yeah.
So I'm kind of letting them build up. Because like you say, a lot of episodes are so boring. They're really, there's like 20 episodes to build up to one single interesting one.
Yes.
So yeah.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Did I tell you I went to Kim Gordon's wardrobe sale?
No. Oh my God.
So crazy.
How was it?
It was really cool. It was in Silver Lake a couple of weeks ago and I saw it on Instagram and then I was like, oh, I want to go, blah, blah, blah. But then the day kind of came and I was like, had no one to go with. But I was like, fuck it, I'll just go. And I was kind of Ijada and I was writing about this, me in LA all the time. My sister on Saturday night was like, we're going to the football and we'll come home and you would have gone out. And I was like, I swear to God, I wouldn't have. I was like lying on the couch when they got home. But then I went and I was going for work. So I was going to write a story about it. So it was kind of cool because it took the pressure out of, I find sample sales and such so stressful. But I arrived at 8:30 and it didn't open till 10. And the line was already pretty long, but like obviously nothing like Chloe Sevigny's one in New York. And the cute girls at the front got there at 6 a.m. with her bagel and her book. And then she was 27 and then the other two beside her were 19. And I was like, how are you guys so cool? And they got there at 6:30 and because they're 19, they didn't have that much money. And they were just like, we're here to kind of, we don't want this to be that competitive sample sale mentality. We just want to treat this as like a look into her life and as if we're visiting a museum or something.
Oh my God, that's awesome. They should, those things should be capped at like one item per person, I think, because it's just so much nicer to give everyone an opportunity to get, like even you mentioning that, I'm like, oh my God, I would love to have gone to that. And I can see myself being intimidated into not going because it's like, oh, the first five people are just going to fleece it.
Yeah.
And then it's boring for everyone else.
Yeah. I think Chloe's one was really badly managed. This was kind of better. It was also small, which was really nice because you just go through. And it started at $20 and stuff went up to like $400. It was cheap, but there wasn't as much. I kind of thought there'd be like a lot of archival Prada and Miu Miu or even her ex-girl range that she released in the 2000s.
Oh my God.
But apparently there was some stuff of that, but I didn't see it. But it was really cute. I got a checkered plaid shirt that's from J. Crew. That's what reminded me of it. That Patrick Dempsey's wearing in the ad that I didn't even see. I saw it on there's like some old J. Crew account that I've been looking at because of Jenna Lyons. J. Crew's like having this moment in the sun. And then, Evan Ross Katz shared that Patrick Dempsey was wearing the exact shirt I have in the 90s.
Amazing.
That Kim Gordon also wore. Quite cool.
That's fucking sick. That's really cool.
The young girls were so sweet. It was really cute.
I love girls.
It was so sweet. It was like the nicest morning of my life. And I was just hanging out with these like 19-year-olds that we all followed each other on Instagram. And that's one of them special. Came out after 10 minutes, Grace. I honestly wanted to cry and kiss her and hug her. She came out after 10 minutes. It was sweltering in the sun by this point because all the shade had left. People had umbrellas because they were smart. And I was just like sweating. And she left after 10 minutes and I was like, hey, why did you leave so soon? And she was like, I just wanted to like give everyone else the opportunity. Plus I got what I wanted. And she got this gorgeous Madewell. What's the thing? Suede tasseled jacket. That was so sick.
That's actually the spirit. So this, I want to talk properly deeper on another episode because you haven't had a chance to read it yet. But Kathy Horan wrote this thing in New York Magazine about how basically like there's not that many people, there's so many new fashion brands and fashion is so huge, but there's actually not that many people doing really interesting things. It's just, there's this appearance that there is, but it's not actually moving the craft in any direction. And she kind of talks a lot about the Pharrell Louis Vuitton thing and how that was such a huge marketing event, but the clothes weren't that interesting. And she was saying how the way fashion has been turned into luxury has made fashion so boring. And I was just thinking as you were saying that, for me, the future of fashion and what will make fashion interesting again is almost this like democratic, reasonably priced shit that young people can buy and wear and can style interestingly. And that's just cool again, instead of things that are just, you know how like vintage became really cool again and then all these vintage brands popped up selling jackets for $5,000 or $6,000 and then that just kind of destroyed that vibe. It feels like every time something happens that's interesting, the money thing becomes a factor and it just all of a sudden becomes inaccessibly expensive. And I think that the next step is going to be stuff that's well made and a focus on craft but is genuinely affordable for people.
Yeah, I agree, because that's kind of what happens is those brands then just hike up their prices. It's like Acne used to be relatively medium priced. Mm-hmm. And it kind of is for some items still, but then you'll go in and shit will be like thousands and thousands of dollars. And you're like, oh. Or brands that you think you should be able to afford, like the new brands that are coming up. Yes. Yeah, you think you should be able to afford them, but then you go in and you're like, this is still $1,000 for a dress. Like, what?
Yes, and Acne almost like it suits being a lower price point. Like it's really cool, it looks great, but the fabrications aren't like $2,000 for a dress fabrications, but that's what
I mean,
they're
nothing
charging.
Fucking is. Like even when you look at like Saint Laurent dresses and it's made out of like 90% polyester and you're like, okay, this is fucking $3,000.
It's so true. That's the reason I mention it in the context of the Kim Gordon thing is like that sense of people just being a little bit fucking normal about it and being like, okay, I'm just going to go in and get this one thing that I like and it's reasonably priced and then just leave. And that's instead of, she could have so easily have done some online sale where every single item was $2,000 or $3,000 and people would have bought it and paid that much for it. But it just takes away the spirit of it so much.
Yeah, it was so nice. I got like some of her t-shirts for $10 each, a Sonic Youth t-shirt because I just was like, I have to, for $75, and then some Acne shorts for $50. And that J. Crew shirt, and then a little cropped boss striped shirt for $25.
Cute.
Yeah, that's, and I was like, that's the future. I was so happy. Whereas I don't know, I think it was also the vibe of as you say, like the girls in there who made me feel really happy with that. Instead of, I think when I initially got there, I was like looking through the racks for vintage Prada and Miu Miu, and then I was like, wait, I just like this shirt.
Yeah.
Who cares?
It's a really, I like that. I think that's a good sign. I think everyone's just getting a bit fucking over everything.
Also, also the way that they market vintage, the way those shops market vintage so well to our pea brains for that like very specific period of time was that these items, which is like true in a sense, but it's like these items are kind of one off. So you go and you see it and you like it and you want it so badly. You want it more than you would want a brand new thing because you feel like you can't get it anywhere else. But it's like there is so much vintage out there, like maybe that one specific piece you'd have to search for to find again. But it's like I think I went through that thing of feeling as though I'd go into a shop and be like, I need to get this, even though I maybe didn't love it as much as I should have to buy it for that much money. And now I'm going into vintage shops here in LA and there's one that popped up, it's James Valoria Vintage, and it's a New York shop and they're doing a pop-up here, and I went in and it's like Dior tops for $200, like Comme des Garçons, like cardigans for $200. Just like everything is around $200. And I'm like, that's a great price for this stuff. That's how much it should be. And it makes you also, it also weirdly makes you feel less crazy and feverish about buying it, because you're like, oh.
100%. I remember seeing like, I had something saved on my real old fucking Galliano Dior thing forever ago. And then I saw the same dress pop up on One of a Kind Vintage on their first dibs for like literally 10 to 15 times the price. And it was 100% the same dress. And I'm sure it was like slightly better quality, or like as in had been kept slightly better. But then I had this total manic thing of, oh my God, I should have got the one on the real, blah, blah, blah. And it was just this idea that these curated places can just hike up the price to whatever. It's like they can just put any dollar value on it. It doesn't actually mean anything. It's not a sign of how rare it is. It's just like, which fucking idiot's dumb enough to pay for this?
Yeah.
And there will always be someone.
For sure. And then it makes you feel, it makes you feel crazy for not buying it. I literally just had that happen on my camera roll. I don't know why. I was scrolling back, and I scrolled back to when I was in New Zealand in a charity shop and put on this oversized, it's kind of a more annoying thing because it's actually something I probably should have bought, but this oversized leather jacket that was like, it's basically just looks so much like the really, really expensive ones that are ever at the moment. And I think it was $300 New Zealand. And I was like, no, because what is this? And just put it back and then was like, oh, great. But whatever.
Yeah, that's the new...
Revolution. I was like, I'm going to call them and see if it's still in the shop in Auckland from 3 months ago and get my sister to go in there. And I was like, you need to get a life. I know I could. It won't be, surely.
No, I really just like that idea now of like, very cool people have obviously always known this, but just being so much more led by how does something feel? How does it fit? Do you actually just getting out of that labels thing mentality, which is very hard to do because it's so drilled into our brains, but it's silly.
Yeah. Or also just embracing what you like, even if it feels like it's not something that you would usually wear. I don't know. I've just been buying those little cutesy white dresses and wearing them, even though my sister was like, I've never seen you wear something like this. And I was like, well, this is the new me and I love it. And then tomorrow I'm going to be wearing the opposite. And it just doesn't matter.
Yeah, nothing matters. We're all going to die. Okay, wait, we need to talk about this Ashton Kutcher Mila Kunis thing. Because is this a huge story? I mean, it's obviously a huge story, right? Is it? I know that you're not like the touchstone for America, but is it like the biggest story in America, would you say?
It's been everywhere for the past couple of days, but I don't know how I would judge that, because for me everywhere means like looking on the Instagram accounts of people I follow, I guess.
So Ashton Kutcher and Mila Kunis are in hot water, baby, because Danny horrible Masterson, who was on that 70s show with them and is one of Ashton Kutcher's best pals, which is very telling, has just been found guilty on rape charges and sentenced to 30 years to life in prison, which is an extremely rare and, in my opinion, wonderful example of proper sentencing, the opposite of what we usually hear. But what's basically come out, which I'm sure Ashton Kutcher and Mila Kunis were mortified to find out had been released, were the character letters that they both wrote to the judge on his behalf. And what's so shocking about it is the fact that they were written in between the period of him being found guilty by a jury and being sentenced by a judge. So like this idea of it was written a few years ago before details came out or whatever is moot. They are essentially asking the judge for leniency and kind of using their power and celebrity to try and push for him to have a lesser sentence. That came out, people are really outraged, and they released this apology, which I think has just made everything 1,000 times worse. But I guess the big thing is about how they, and him in particular, Ashton Kutcher, position themselves as advocates for victims of sexual violence, because they have this like human trafficking and child trafficking charity, and he has done amazing things with that charity. Like, none of that stuff's so been true because of this.
Like, it's great, but so
yeah, he's like spoken random to Congress and like raised millions of dollars, and like it's this huge thing. And the fact that he positions himself in this very public facing way, in a way that's really beneficial to his like persona, whilst quietly, secretly behind the scenes advocating to get an actual convicted sex like offender a lesser sentence, just feels so fucking hypocritical and crazy.
I know. I'm not at all, I don't think they should have written those letters at all, but at the same time I can like, it's just that thing of everyone believing victims until it's like someone close to them, and then they just don't believe it at all. And that, I feel like that's just the thing we need to be speaking about and kind of nailing into people, that it is, it's like Chanel Contos, the little legend, I just saw on Instagram the other day. Like, I mean, she said this since the very first time she began kind of like being in the spotlight for everything, but she was just saying like she still speaks to men who are like, yeah, but I don't know any guy, I don't have any friend who would ever do this, but yeah, of course I support women, and of course sexual assault and stuff shouldn't happen. And it's like, she was just like, I find this so frustrating. There's some quote that just popped up on my Instagram yesterday, and I was like, that's exactly it. And like, I it's like the Lena Dunham thing all over again.
Mm-hmm.
Where you, and I get that, because Ashton Kutcher did say in his thing, you know, we were asked by his wife, we know his wife really well, we know his kids really well, but it's like, I don't know, someone did a crime. You can't.
I totally agree with you. I think the best conversation that people should take away from this is like not about fucking massively wealthy celebrities infighting. It's about, this represents the problem with like how we combat this as a society. Because like you say, it's very easy to condemn stuff like sexual violence from afar, and everyone then struggles to deal with it when it arrives in their backyard. And we need to have like really frank, honest, difficult conversations as a culture about how we do that. Because that was a point I wanted to make too, was like, at the same time, it's very easy for us to condemn their actions from afar with, when it's not out, like, as he says in that letter, it's his best friend in the whole world for 25 years. Like, he says, it's one of the only people outside of my wife and my like mother that I would let be around my children. Like, I think that's a very complicated moral situation to be in, and we should have a certain amount of like empathy for that being a difficult situation for people, regardless of whether they're famous or not.
This is maybe a stupid point, but I was just thinking about how even if you did believe someone did something bad, but they were your best friend of 25 years, imagine how ignoring them asking you to do that. You'd be like, sorry, I missed your text. Been offline for a week. It's just so awkward.
It's so awkward, but I guess the deeper conversation is, these accusations came out in 2017. Danny Masterson was working with on a show Ashton Kutcher executive produces for Netflix at that time, and they had to stand him down after the allegations came out. There's been two trials, because the first one was a hung jury. If this is your best friend in the whole world, you've been across this and are aware of this for a long period of time. You're obviously aware of the details that have come out in the trial, which are extremely fucking harrowing and confronting. So to me, the fact that the letter's existing and the half-assed apology says that they don't believe it's true, is what I feel. And I think that's almost the bigger thing to deal with. I don't think if you actually believe that your friend has done all of this stuff, you're just like, oh, I'll just, and you're that famous that you just write a thing to be polite. I think that there is some creepy, like, you know, groupthink that's going on behind the scenes, where anyone on Danny Masterson's side of it is essentially accusing the victims of fabricating this. And there's a really big Scientology undercurrent to the whole thing, which I think is really essential to talk about, because a lot of the accusers have talked about these fucking crazy Scientologists, as we know from all the shit we've watched before, trying to drive them off the side of the road. One of them says their dog was beaten to death. Suddenly,
oh my God.
Phones tapped, internet things tapped, being followed, being like, this is a 20 years of like insane, horrific harassment by the Scientology Church. Like, that's a big part of this whole thing. And what some people have said, and this, like, I guess taps a little bit into conspiratorial territory, is they recognize in the statements from Ashton Kutcher and Mila Kunis wording that feels as if it's been vetted by and read by the Scientology legal team who have been in charge of Danny Masterson's trial.
Are they Scientologists?
I don't know. I don't think so. They're not publicly considered Scientologists, but like it feels as if maybe this is a thing. If your best friend of 25 years is like one of the most prominent celebrity Scientologists, you're backing him through this trial and writing a letter to the judge.
I didn't even know that.
I didn't know that either. But the other thing as well that someone said is like both letters go to these long lengths to talk about how both Mila Kunis and Ashton Kutcher would have done drugs if it wasn't for Danny Masterson. And like, he's the reason they never did drugs and never slipped into a drug taking lifestyle because he's so anti-drugs, which everyone found really obscure to mention. But he's accused of drugging his victims. So there's like this sinister undertone of like, they just seem like saying, oh, we didn't do drugs because of him. But there's this underside of like two hugely famous A-list Hollywood celebrities insinuating to a judge that the complainants are lying in the letter as like another side to it, which could be true or could not be true. But they were basically, people are just saying that it feels as if Scientology lawyers have had some sort of massaging of that document, which, knowing Scientologists, I just wouldn't be shocked by. But it just brings a whole like additional murky layer into it.
Yeah, it's so gross. Christina Ricci on Instagram stories just being like, so sometimes people we have loved and admired do horrible things. They might not do these things to us, and we only know who they were to us, but that doesn't mean they didn't do the horrible things, and to discredit the abuse is a crime. People we know as awesome guys can be predators and abusers. It's tough to accept, but we have to. If we say we support victims, women, children, men, boys, then we must be able to take this stance. And then someone was like, here's to her for positively wrecking Ashton Kutcher and Mila Kunis, for tactically denying Danny Masterson as a serial rapist and giving a half-assed non-apology without ever addressing them directly, a queen.
The apology deserves a deep dive. The apology is fucking insane. Like, just from a PR perspective.
What was up with Mila Kunis in that? It's so weird. Like, did she just not want to do that at all? She was forced to do it, so she thought, okay, I'll do a half-assed one. Would Ashton not be like, babe, you need to act better?
Do another take. That's what I felt. So they're obviously reading off a teleprompter on the screen. Ashton Kutcher is trying quite hard to like say these overly rehearsed, lawyered lines in a casual way, cadence. And Mila Kunis is reading them like a news reporter. She's saying, like, with this really weird intonation. And looks kind of bored and pissed off. Whether she was trying to go for serious, and it none of it rang sincere. I want to say, in a very weird, like, thing, not in their defense, but just as context, is I did go on further down his Instagram account just out of curiosity, and I watched a video of them announcing that they'd raised all this money for the Ukraine, and the delivery was really similar. It was like them sitting in front of the computer in the same way, reading off something on the laptop, and him talking in that chill, casual way, and her reading the lines in that weird way she read them in the statement. Like, I don't know if it's just a thing that they do or something, and they just didn't. So I don't know. I think maybe part of that's just how she talks, and it came across especially jarring in that context. I definitely don't think the video should have been released.
Yeah, because then also when she was like emphasizing and being like, we believe victims. Yeah. We do this through our work. And then just, I don't know, I was like, it's also his work. And also you just seem like you're lying. But I guess it must be hard for him to be like, babe, you need to be a better actress.
But it's like your whole
There's
livelihood.
A bigger conversation at play here. That's what I mean, though.
The stakes were huge.
Yeah.
What it came off as, and I think why people are so furious about it and it's hard to say whether it's come off this way unintentionally or what. Is it? It felt like two people who are above this whole thing throwing a raggedy, half-assed apology to, like, the unwashed masses who were, like, so stupid that they just have to say sorry and get... Like, if it had this, like, condescending, we don't actually have to put effort into this vibe. And I think people feel very strongly that Hollywood elites, as they like to say, condescend or talk down to, like, the general population and think they're kind of on a huge moral high ground. And I think that's how it felt. It didn't have any contrition considering what they're accused of doing. And I think if you believe that your friend has been wrongly incarcerated, I think that's fucking insane because it's so at odds with the evidence. But you should just stick by that, you know, don't be cowards, like, stick by it. Or don't, like, this half in between thing where you don't actually really apologize or acknowledge how insane it is, but then you're also just trying to get people off your back, I just think is quite, I don't know.
There's also those crazy things you put on the document. I feel like we can't even talk about them.
I think we can, because it's like, basically, Chrissy Bexler is one of the three Jane Does, and she was Danny Masterson's girlfriend for, like, a long period, for 6 years. And she is married to Cedric from At the Drive-In, weirdly. And so she's mildly famous, not super famous, but I think more so than the other Jane Does. And she has basically put out an accusation on Instagram in which she says something like, Ashton... I was there for everything. I was there for everything you and your buddy did. Never forget. I won't forget what happened on February 20th or 21st, 2000. I can't remember the date.
2001. So she said, "Dear Ashton, I know the secrets your role model, in quotation marks, keeps for you, ones that would end you. Did you forget I was there? You were on speakerphone the night you called Danny on February 21st, 2001. I heard everything. I heard the plan. In my opinion, you're just as sick as your quote-unquote mentor." That's crazy. This needs to be studied.
Yeah, it's nuts. So this is referencing, which is really awful, 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 which I did know, Ashton Kutcher's ex-girlfriend Ashley Ellerin, who was murdered by a serial killer called the Hollywood Ripper when she was 22. And the night that she was found, Ashton Kutcher went over to her house to pick her up for a date, says that she didn't answer, he thought she stood him up, that he left, and then the next day found out she'd been killed when a friend discovered her body. What people thought when Chrissy posted this on Instagram was that she was somehow insinuating that Ashton Kutcher had something to do with it and that she was some crazy conspiracy theorist. What I read it as, and what people have since started talking about, was this idea, which another person who knew them at the time has actually said on a podcast like 7 months ago. The rumor is that Ashton Kutcher arrived at the house and actually did see something, freaked the fuck out because he was a young actor on the rise and didn't know what to do, worried about being blamed, was obviously, like, horrified, and that he went back to his car and called his friend Danny Masterson, who suggested to him that he just leave the scene and not call the police because it would be way too bad for his reputation. And she's basically insinuating that she was there and on speakerphone, and that was part of that actually happened. And I guess the reason that it's being brought up and why it could be relevant is this notion that, like, does Danny Masterson, like, have something on Ashton Kutcher, and that's why he's putting his and his wife's career on the line to write this, you know, letter or something. It's gotten very dark and depraved and kind of awful.
It's also, yeah, it's so crazy. How did, like, a murder get into this by the Hollywood Ripper and Scientology? It's just a wild story. And what's this other Instagram? "You'll want to ask Ashton Kutcher if he remembers that orchestrated meeting between himself, January Jones, Laura Pippen, and me that took place in my, in brackets, Danny Masterson's living room in 1998. I know the secrets your role model keeps. Hidden cameras."
Hidden cameras. Yeah. So she's like going all out. There's a lot of shit, wow. like old videos being brought up of Danny Masterson just being a disgusting fucking pig. And I just know that the early 2000s was a different time. And I know that there are things that were said then that were very common and laughed about that are like not that we all look back on and realize were disgusting. But he just for him to be Ashton Kutcher's like ride or die best friend through all of this shit, I just find very questionable. It really makes me reconsider for sure. him a lot.
Yeah, for sure. It's and even the stuff that I don't know. I'm like, it's so gross to. I know that it was the early 2000s, but it's so gross to look back at these videos of Ashton Kutcher being whatever 19 and being like, can't wait for Hillary Duff to turn 15.
She turned 18, yeah.
16. Wait, when is the legal age for sex? Isn't it 16?
Yeah, I think so. But yeah, that video was like, she's one of those girls that were all just waiting to turn 18. I think he was older than 19 there. I think he was quite a bit older.
Well, yeah, he must yeah. have been. If I thought she was 15 and he was 19, but it must have been like she was 17 and he was 24 or something.
It's like that culture, that video of him saying that everyone's being like disgusting and then people are saying, well, that was just mainstream culture at the time. You can't blame the whole thing on him. But I'm also like, there's a reason why guys like that were the guys during that time, because that's how they actually felt. You know, it wasn't him like with a gun to his head being forced to say that because it was a laddie culture. It's like he encapsulated that attitude towards young girls, you know? It's all so grubby.
And Mila Kunis talking about, which is obviously they're married now, so it's whatever, but her talking about how she was 14 for their first kiss and he was 19. And Danny Masterson was like telling Ashton Kutcher to try to stick his tongue down his throat and he'd give him $10.
Yeah.
I was like, that's fucking feral.
Yeah, they're all just like, yeah, it sounds like that set. It's also just like all this being around that 70s show, I find so cursed as well. I'm like, that show was always, I just never like watched it or liked. I always just found it so random. And now I'm like, it's the center of like this giant pop culture mega storm.
Wow. I want us to get Chrissy on the pod.
I know. I love Chrissy.
Crazy. But yeah, Mila in that video is absolutely crazy.
I wonder what they'll do next. It's the backlash is pretty strong. I know everyone likes to jump on these things and they get over stuff really quickly, but I do think this is going to do quite like lasting damage to their reputations.
Yeah. I agree.
Crazy.
Crazy. I can't believe I used to be in love with Ashton Kutcher.
I know. Sorry.
He was the love of my life when I was 12.
He would have loved you then.
Yeah, he would have been like 25.
Yeah.
I also saw the funniest thing on Twitter of Chris Evans. Chris Evans and Alba Baptista got married over the weekend. And then someone put on Twitter, Chris Evans is 42 and she's 26. And then someone said, y'all need to learn the difference between being a predator and just being a loser.
Exactly.
I was like, yes.
The internet discourse is so funny. Like, even people were being like, everyone's forgetting that he groomed Mila Kunis. I'm like, I think they got together when they were both like in their 30s.
Yeah.
Like, just everyone needs to try not to make, you know, 2 + 2 = 7 all the time.
I know.
But the Scientologist, like, the core of this, two key things, the conversation we were saying before about, like, when people can't recognize, like, violence when it's their own friends, but also just, like, how fucking insane the Church of Scientology is. I think that should be, like, a huge takeaway from this case. It's such a huge part of all the, like, victim impact statements. It's just, like, waiting 20 years to get justice because the church covered it up.
Yeah, it's so crazy. I need to read more into that side of it.
That place is nuts.
I'm going to be followed now. Now I'm not going to be able to sleep because the Scientologists would have heard after work drinks.
I've got bigger fish to fry this week, I think. They're just silly. Like, they're so silly. Everything about them is so silly. Like, their religion is so silly. Like, everything is silly, but then they're so crazy that it's scary.
Yeah. Agreed. Where's Tom Cruise in all of this?
I know. That's a really good point. I want to see behind the scenes more.
There's a big Scientology department near my house. I can go and try and do some investigative journalism.
Go and ask them. They'll put you in that room where they make you take like a 4-hour personality test.
I'll be like, I'm a Pisces.
They'll like just leave after 6 hours.
I'm still talking. They're like, it was over so long ago.
Question.
Oh, okay. Anyway, we must go.
Must go. Love you guys. Bye.
Bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.